from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. In our next half hour, should the state shut the doors of its remaining juvenile justice facilities and send those juvenile offenders back to the counties? The vast majority of juvenile offenders are already supervised at the county level, but the most serious offenders, some 1,100 young people, are housed by the state at an average cost of about $180,000 a year. Now the governor wants to phase out the state's role altogether and send all juvenile offenders, including those that are the most serious, back to their home counties. This week, the Nonpartisan Legislative Analyst's Office weighed in on this debate and this proposal from the governor, and that's where we're going to start our conversation. Joining us, Brian Brown. He is the Managing Principal Analyst at the Legislative Analyst's Office in Sacramento. Mr. Brown, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Governor Brown's proposal is to close down the Division of Juvenile Justice by June of 2015 and send, as I was just describing, these 1,100 of the most serious offenders back to the county level. You did an assessment of the proposal. Tell us whether or not you think it's the right way to go.
Yeah, ultimately we do. Our office has been on record for a number of years suggesting that counties would be better situated and able to manage these types of even serious and violent juvenile offenders locally than the state can in state juvenile facilities. In our evaluation, though, we thought there were a number of major issues and implementation issues that the governor didn't address. And so while we supported the proposal in concept, we felt like there was more development that needed to be done.
Before we get into what some of those concerns were, why did you come to that conclusion that counties are better able to contend with this population than the state?
Well, it's a couple of issues, and you actually addressed one of them, which is the historical context here. So actually, over the past 15 or 20 years, the state has shifted more of this responsibility to counties, to probation departments. And so, as you said, we have only less than 1% of juvenile offenders that are housed at the state level. The counties already manage 99% of these offenders, and so we think they have the infrastructure in place that they could manage these offenders locally. But it goes beyond that as well. And one of the things we know about these types of offenders is that they have a lot of needs, mental health history. Some of them are sex offenders. They need sex offender treatment. A high percentage of them have substance abuse treatment needs. And the counties are better equipped because a lot of those services are already provided locally through their probation departments, through their county agencies, through community-based organizations to integrate those services not only within their juvenile facilities, but also to, as these offenders leave those facilities, to incorporate those services into their supervision and into their transition back into the community.
And briefly, Mr. Brown, tell us what you think needs to be done in terms of implementing this strategy. You mentioned that while you in general support what the governor wants to do, that there were some gaps in his proposal. What has to take place in order for the implementation of this proposal to be successful?
Well, there are a few things, but probably the most critical one is the question of funding. So the governor identifies that there would be savings to the state and suggests that there would be some amount of funding that would be provided to locals, but doesn't identify how much. And this is a difficult question to get at because we don't have very good data on how much counties currently spend to manage these types of offenders. And again, we know that counties actually already manage a large number of the serious and violent offenders locally, and counties do a very different job. There's quite a bit of variation in how well counties do at managing those types of offenders, and there are some counties that that have what we would consider sort of best practices. What we think we need to do is go identify those counties, assess how much they spend to manage those types of offenders effectively, and then make sure that we provide counties and grant funding a level of funding that's sufficient to provide that type of effective treatment. So what we don't want to do is shortchange counties as they try to manage this type of population. If you do this type of population, it's really critical that we set it up so that it's set up to work and work effectively, and so that we'll get better results than what we do at the state level. And the first key to that is making sure there's sufficient funding.
Brian Brown, the managing principal analyst at the Legislative Analyst Office, they issued a report this week about Governor Brown's proposal that the remaining 1,100 juvenile offenders who are the responsibility of the state be sent back to their home counties. Mr. Brown, thanks for getting us started on our conversation this morning.
Happy to. Thank you.
Joining us now also is Barry Crisberg. He's director of the Earl Warren Institute on Law and Social Policy at the University of California, Berkeley's School of Law. Mr. Crisberg, good morning.
Good morning.
And here, too, is Selena Teshi. She is a communication specialist with the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. Selena Teshi, good morning as well.
Good morning.
Barry Crisberg, you are well familiar, I know, with this proposal of the governor's, and I know you have real concerns about it. We heard Brian Brown, outline a couple of them, including the fact that counties are disparate in their abilities to really pull this off, and that there also needs to be a substantial amount of funding. As you look at the proposal, are those the things that concern you the most?
Well, those and the fact that I do not think that any of the counties currently have the either the training or the programs to manage the youth who are currently in the Department of Juvenile Justice. I think the notion that the counties are already managing people like those in DJJ is just not true.
Describe who we're talking about, because the county responsibility now is for the vast majority of juvenile offenders. Something like 99%, is that right, of all juvenile offenders are currently at the county level. So, who is this 1%? Sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's right, but so many the juvenile justice system is filled with a lot of minor offenders, truants, graffiti writers. Kids who steal bicycles, etc. By and large, the counties are dealing with either youth committing those minor crimes, kids who are arrested for possession of drugs. The counties, with one small exception, are not dealing with violent offenders. If you go into DJJ, because we've already sent 90% of the youth from DJJ to the counties over the last several years, so now you've got this, you know, this 10% of the old DJJ population. These youth are either serious sex offenders, or they have been convicted of a series of very serious violent offenses: armed robbery, manslaughter, murder, attempted murder. And the only experience that the counties have with these kids, by and large, is that they've held them pre their trials or pre their adjudication. But they're not geared up in any way, received any training, have any programs to manage these youth. Any counties.
Barry Crisberg, director of the Earl Warren Institute on Law and Social Policy at UC Berkeley's School of Law. Let's bring into our conversation Selena Teshi, who has a different view on this. She's with the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. On that specific concern that we're talking about, kids who have committed serious crimes, violent crimes often, and that those just – they have fundamentally different problems than the kids the counties are currently dealing with. Respond to that. Why would counties be able to contend with kids who represent those kinds of issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are a couple of issues here concerning capacity to deal with those high level of offenders. First of all, the state doesn't have the capacity to serve those offenders either. Incredibly expensive. They're under a lawsuit. This is the ninth year of the lawsuit that they've been attempting to reform and have yet not been able to provide adequate rehabilitation to those kids. So if we're talking about capacity, the state doesn't have the capacity either. And in this fiscal time of crisis, there are scarce resources. We have to figure out where is the best investment for our resources, and it's not at the state level. We can't continue to operate these dual systems. So what we have to look at is, where is the potential for those kids to get the best services? Best correctional practices say it's at the local level. Secretary Matt Cate has said it's at the local level. On the adult side, it's being shifted to the local level. And as the LAO, Brian Brown, pointed out, historically, we've been shifting juvenile justice to the local level already. So Even if the counties don't have the capacity now, that's where we should be investing for them to have capacity.
And can they have that capacity according to this timeline of having this in place in the next 3 years?
Yes. So the governor, one of the issues with the governor's proposal, I think, that counties are facing is that there is no structured implementation plan, right? There's just this closure of the front door. And what CJCJ would support and what LAO actually lays out in there.
Before we get lost in too many initials, that's
The Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice and the Legislative Analyst's Office is recommending is a more staggered approach. So counties, we're not saying close the door today, send all those kids back to the county level tomorrow, right? We're saying develop over time, over several years, develop that capacity at the county level. And I think it's a disservice to counties to say that no counties are serving high level of offenders. In 2004, several counties announced a moratorium on sending youth to DJJ, the state facilities, and they were serving their very high needs offenders at the county level. So counties do have experience with that high level of offender.
Selena Teshi, she's with the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice. We welcome your calls and comments on this subject. What do you think? Should the most serious juvenile offenders in our state be sent back to the county level? Is that the place where their needs and the needs of the community in general can best be served? We welcome your participation at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us, too, at forum@kqed.org, or you can add your comments also on our Facebook page. Barry Crisberg, do you in principle support the idea of programs being done at the local level if adequate resources and training are made available? Or do you fundamentally think this really should be a state responsibility?
I believe it should be for the most serious juvenile offenders. I think it's a state it should be a state responsibility where the funding can be stabilized and is not subject to year-to-year fluctuations in county budgets. I also think there's a very practical issue of economy of scale. If I'm trying to put together a mental health program for very needy youth, it's one thing to organize that centrally as opposed to expecting that 58 counties will solve this problem where really only Los Angeles might have a critical mass of people. So you know, again, I think people should take pause from the idea that not a single American state has done this. You know, we would be the first state in the country that would close down their state juvenile system. That's a pretty radical move, and there's probably good reasons why no other state would contemplate this.
Well, Selena Teshi, that seems like a fair point, both that no other state has done this, but also the idea that if you're dealing with people who have these sorts of serious problems, why not concentrate the resources that are necessary to help them in one place as opposed to replicating that at scores of counties all over the state?
Right. So I think this comes down to when you have a youth with very high needs, you really need to treat them locally, not in isolation. The state facilities are very disparate. They're away from community-based services. They're away from their families. When you have a youth with, say, very high mental health needs, they need to be served closer to their family so they can be engaging in treatment that's going to create a continuum of care back into the community. Because eventually these kids come back to their neighborhoods and have to learn to survive there. So I think it's always better to promote as close to their home services as possible. For those counties, and Barry Crisberg is absolutely right, it would be hard for some counties to develop those services for, you know, the one high needs kid that they have. And that's definitely an issue that needs to be thought about and thought out in a really constructive way. And one possible solution to that would be regional facilities. So you're not talking about 58 different mental health facilities. You're talking about regional neighboring counties partnering together to serve those kids.
Let me ask you both about the money, because it's astonishing on the surface, at least, when you see that for these 1,100 youth cost $180,000 a year each. I've seen some estimates actually that go up to $200,000 a year per a resident, which is, what, five or six times what it costs to go to your institution, Barry Crisberg, the University of California. So why is that? Why does it cost so much? And what could be done to, if we're going to spend that much, at least then have services that you get your money's worth from? Barry Crisberg?
That's a good question. A lot of the costs are driven by the fact that the state, particularly, but also the counties, pay a lot of money for our probation staff. I mean, we have the highest paid probation staff in the nation. But also very critical is that because of a series of court suits, the state is now required to provide education, mental health, and medical services, and those get to be pretty pricey. And then finally, we made a bad mistake several years ago by putting DJJ under the Department of Corrections. And what that bought us into was an extraordinary overhead rate, which unfortunately DJJ has to bear. If we removed DJJ from the Department of Corrections, which almost everybody but the Department of Corrections supports, the cost would go down. At the county level, we have no idea what they're spending. There is no accountability. There's no way of finding that out. For all we know, some of the counties are spending more money.
Let's take a call on this subject, and then I'd like to get your two cents, so to speak, Selena Teshi, on the question of costs. Christopher in Oakland has a comment. Christopher, go ahead.
Hi. I work in corrections as a clinical psychologist, and my colleagues who work with these youth in the Department of Juvenile Justice, the way they describe these kids that they work with, they are the most dangerous and the most needy in the entire system. And so the idea that the counties have the capacity just doesn't make sense when you look at how it actually is on the ground. 58 counties doing this in 58 different ways really seems like a recipe to not treat these kids and give them the services that they deserve, and also will put public safety at risk.
Yeah, Christopher, thank you. Selena, respond, please.
Yes. Again, I think it comes back to the fact that the state isn't doing a very good job. They have a really high recidivism rate, and they're not providing the services now anyway. And out of those kids that are at DJJ, yes, there are some kids there with severe health, mental health needs, sex offenders. And there's also a general population that's violent but don't present those specialized needs. And as I mentioned before, several counties have already taken on responsibility for those offenders. They don't use the state facilities very often. So they're serving most of those offenders at the county level already and not compromising public safety.
Barry Crisberg, do you feel like this is, it seems like Governor Brown on many fronts, also true in adult corrections, also true in education, that there's this desire to sort of move things back to the county. Is that a sort of public policy trend, I guess, that gives you pause?
Well, I think it does, because it suggests that somehow there's expertise and wisdom in the counties that I wonder exists. You know, back in the Nixon years, we had something called devolution, where we tried this great experiment of turning everything back down to the states, back down to the counties. It didn't work out so well. So I think there's a concern here. Most of the large states in this country, most of the urbanized larger states, are in the opposite direction. They're centralizing services at the state level. They're creating consistent funding, consistent training, etc. Now, you can still organize your services on a regional basis. That's what Michigan does. That's what New York does. That's what Florida does. So, I mean, the issue of close to home is not the problem. The question is, are the people who are running these programs adequately trained? Do they have the appropriate skills? And finally, this notion that DJJ is not providing services. I mean, I've been a harsh critic of DJJ my career. And I've also been a very close monitor for the last 8 years. And there have been substantial improvements. And I think one of the problems is a lot of the critics from DJJ are stuck in 2002. They're not even aware of what positive changes have taken place in healthcare, in education, in a dramatic reduction in the number of kids who are locked up round the clock. At the counties, we have no idea what's going on. There's no accountability for the counties. And my biggest concern is when you localize the system and there's no oversight and accountability, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah. Selena Teshi.
I think, you know, Barry Crisberg is a monitor on that lawsuit, and so he does visit these facilities regularly. And in the last audit, you know, the experts found that kids weren't getting the educational services they need. Barry Crisberg himself has said that those facilities are literally crumbling, the physical facilities. And even though they're building these modular buildings, like these temporary classrooms to teach kids in, it's not enough for long-term commitments. It's not enough to teach these kids in these temporary classrooms. So I think there are really, really structural problems at the state level that they're going to have to overcome, and the lawsuit's going to continue.
Let me ask about another concern, which is whether or not if you were to proceed in the way that the governor has outlined, and this very small percentage of the most serious offenders is moved back to the county level, what effect will that have on the more modest form of juvenile offenders who are there now? In other words, will the 1% sort of trump the services that are provided to the vast majority of juvenile offenders? So we wind up focusing on this very small population, and the vast majority of juvenile offenders then won't get the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. And actually, let me address another point, because I think Barry Crisberg is absolutely right about accountability. It's very difficult to know what each individual county is doing. And I think that's an excellent role for the state to play moving forward. Absolutely, he's right. We need more accountability. We need to understand what's happening at the county level and that monitoring more appropriately. And I think that's what should be developed into the realignment plan, and what we should be discussing those sorts of issues. And I think in terms of treatment at the county level, provided there is a sustainable source of funding coming to the counties for that realigned population, for those high needs kids, you can separate out the low risk from the high risk and treat them separately through this sustained source of funding. It wouldn't necessarily have to compromise. If done correctly, it wouldn't necessarily have to compromise their other services.
Do you worry about that part of this equation, Barry Crisberg?
Yes, I do, because we fought very hard in DJJ to put in place a classification system which separated out the very aggressive high-rate offenders from the lesser kids. It took a while, but it was implemented, and it's working effectively. The counties don't have these systems. In fact, one of the things that's interesting is if you go to a county, many of the counties don't even have written policies and procedures. When we started at DJJ, they didn't have written policies and procedures, but 8 years later, they have them. So I think what's going to happen here is, if this proposal goes forward, the prison law office and others will begin suing these counties, basically saying, you've got to provide these youth everything that the state has agreed to, and it's going to take a while, but eventually the counties are going to will lose all these lawsuits and have to provide all of the mental health, disability, education, and other services that the state is now providing. So those costs will escalate.
Before we wrap up our hour, and there is still time if you want to get in an observation about this, you can still join us at 866-733-6786 on this idea of whether or not the county should now take on all juvenile offenders and not have that provided as a service by the state. 866-733-6786 if you'd like to weigh in. But we'd be remiss if we didn't touch in this program on what works. I mean, first Barry Crisberg and then Selina Teshi on that. Do we know, Barry Crisberg? I mean, are there models out there, if not in California, then elsewhere, about what can make a difference for kids who are in trouble?
Yes. For youth in general who are in trouble, we have a lot of evidence that the model that's been implemented by the Missouri Department of Youth Services is a very effective model. And Santa Clara County has already taken the lead, and San Francisco is now starting to move in that direction.
And briefly, what does that include?
It basically means much smaller facilities. It means treating the kids like normally, not like inmates, but like young people, letting them dress normally, and building a system around incentives, not punishment. And it seems to work, you know, by all cases, it seems to work pretty well.
But if Santa Clara County is doing that, sorry to jump in on you, then that would seem to be an argument for counties doing it.
Except I did the evaluation of Santa Clara, and the Santa Clara program is exclusively property offenders and drug offenders.
Mm.
They're not trying to do this with the more violent offenders. Now, what I would say is, for the more violent offenders, there are some models out there, and the best researched one is a program run by the Texas Youth Commission called the Texas Capital Offender Program, capital meaning capital crimes. And this is a program that's been well-researched and well-documented and works really well. And I would love to see California reach out to Texas and bring that program for these youth who have committed very violent crimes.
Salim Teshi, on your thoughts on what we know that works best and why that would happen more effectively at the county level.
Yeah, we know that the best interventions happen at the point at which the offender is most likely to return. And so that's where they committed the offense usually, because they return back into the community. So as locally as you can get them, because the reason is because you can provide them services from in the secure placement, then you can give them a step down, and then you can follow them into the community with the same services to help them upon reentry. And that's why county level services would be better.
Just one quick comment from a caller before we have to wrap up. Nikki, just briefly, please, your thoughts on this subject.
Yes, I am a school counselor, formerly worked in the juvenile justice system, and I'm concerned about the tone of many of these comments, and that one, it's an economic issue. How much money are we spending to lock our children up rather than provide for them schools? Because what, $5,000 a year in California for a school education versus $180,000 a year to support a youth in the system? And two, there are incredible things happening at the county level that I am concerned that perhaps the knowledgeable person, I'm forgetting his name here, from DJJ, may not be aware of. I have worked with individuals who love, support, work hard, work overtime, wish that they could do things, that there are resources, education is happening in absolutely incredible ways.
Nikki, and I'm going to,
thank
you. Thanks, Nikki, and I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we are just out of time. Just a last quick comment from each of you. Barry Crisberg, a last quick thought.
California has gone 90% of the way of realigning its juvenile offenders, and that's worked out very well. Now we're down to a difficult, challenging group that I believe can be redeemed and can be helped, but they need high-quality training, high-quality programs delivered by well-trained staff. If we could do the training and have the programs, then we can reach these kids.
And Selena Teshi.
And I absolutely agree with everything that Barry Crisper just finished on. And I think that can happen at the county level, but it's not going to be easy. And we need to be investing in counties now and asking them what are their needs. So when we plan for realignment, we can really give them the support to actually act on it.
Selena Teshi of the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice, Barry Crisberg at the University of California, Berkeley's School of Law. Thanks both very much for being part of our program. Forum is produced by Tina Lorberg and Kevin Guillory. Our engineer this morning is Howard Gelman. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, who believe all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.